Eagles Entertainment.
With the 10th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey of the Draft podcast, presented by LifeBrand. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and the new league year is here in the NFL, 2023 officially underway, but the draft process still rolls on, and we are going to talk through some draft prospects here. Pick six with Greg Cosell. We're going to cover three different positions, a couple of blue chip prospects here. Jalen Carter, potential top 10 pick. Miles Murphy from Clemson, potential top 10 pick. A handful of others. We'll cover that with Greg in pick six. After that, we've got Draft Buzz, where Ben Fennell and I, we're going to talk through how free agency and the start of the new league year has impacted what could happen with the draft market. We'll cover that with Ben. We'll talk through a new mock draft from Fox Sports. We've got a couple other big items as well that are newsworthy, so we'll cover all that with Ben. And then we've got a question from you at home in our draft mailbag. We'll hit that at the end of the show, which always allows me to segue into the fact that, hey, if you want to throw us your support, or if you have a question, a comment, a mock draft, a set of player rankings, whatever it is that you want us to address, go on to Apple Podcasts, leave it there in the comment section. We will answer your question. We will break down your mock draft. We will separate your rankings. We will do whatever you want. Just go leave it there with a review. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated there on the Apple Podcast page or wherever you get your podcast. That said, let's get into pick six. It's time now to welcome in Greg Cosell.
Now it's time for pick six.
All right, back for another segment of Pick Six, my friend Greg Cosell from NFL Films. You can follow him on Twitter at Greg Cosell. Greg, we've got six more players to dive into here in this draft class. You've been grinding away at your desk. I'm excited to get your thoughts on some of these guys.
Yeah, you know, it's there's a lot of guys, Fran, as you know. And unfortunately, it's not like you can take care of, you know, 10 guys in a day. You know, sometimes I just wish I could, but it doesn't quite happen that way.
For your sake, I hope you haven't heard anybody say like, oh, it's only 40 days until the draft anytime recently, because every time I hear that, like a chill goes down my spine that I just have not gotten enough work done yet. But
no, it's funny. Every day I take note of the date, and that's how I'm sure for you, that's the way my world is working now. Oh, it's March 16th. God, that's one day closer to the draft. You know, that's the way my mind's working these days.
Yeah, it's like, oh great, we're 4 or 5 weeks away. Outstanding. I'm so excited by that. But that said, let's get into some of these notes on these players. We'll start along the defensive line. You and I haven't done a ton of defensive linemen yet. This is a widely considered to be a talent-rich position here in this draft. And we'll start, let's go with the headliner. This is a guy that's obviously in the news just because of the pro day this week. Obviously, he's got some issues away from the field that are in the process of being cleared up. But Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle from the University of Georgia, a guy that has been in the discussion as the top player in this draft class. And I want to get your thoughts. Obviously, you're going to focus in on the film. There's other things right to take in mind here. But based solely off what you've seen from tape, what do you see from Jalen Carter?
I think if you're basing it solely on tape, you see a pretty high-level prospect. I mean, he's got athleticism. He's got quickness. He's got explosiveness. He plays with strength. He plays with power. We've seen examples, as you have, where he literally just throws away interior offensive linemen, and those are usually the guys that weigh more. You know, we've seen him dominate as a one-gap player where he lines up as a three technique, you know, just outside an offensive guard, and his ability to penetrate and play with elite first-step quickness and short-area explosiveness, it's pretty high level. You know, as I mentioned, we've seen him just with strong, violent, heavy hands control and displace interior offensive linemen who weigh 320 pounds. So the tape is really, really positive. Now, the only thing I would say is I think that his special plays are truly special. If you wanted a nitpick, you could argue that there are times where you don't see that as much as you would like, given what his traits and attributes are. I did notice this particular season, because I watched him in 2021 as well, that as the season progressed, over the last 6-7 games, he played far more snaps than he did earlier in the season. There were games later in the season he played upwards of 50 snaps. He ended up averaging 32 snaps per game, but over the last 5-6 games, he really played far more snaps, which was really a positive. You know, there's specific plays that pop into my head as we're talking. I remember in the 2022 matchup with Florida, he just drove back offensive guard Osiris Torrance, who people are talking about as a, you know, potential top 40 type pick at guard. He just drove him back into the pocket with strength and power on an inside pass rush, you know, as if Torrence was a 190-pound, you know, high school junior. So you see those kinds of plays with Carter.
And that's the thing. I mean, you said one word there multiple times. You said dominate or dominant, right? And I think when you look at Jalen Carter, you know, at 6'3", he came in at 323 at the pro day, but he's been around, you know, like 310, 305, 308. He's been in that range for the most part of when he's been playing. And this guy has been dominant in every sense of the word. Run game, pass game has been outstanding. And I think the big thing that stands out is, you know, the last year he was the first guy off the bench, right? You know, you had Jordan right. Davis, Devontae Wyatt as the starters. They were two first-round picks, and Carter came in off the bench, and his numbers were crazy. And everyone said, oh, well, can he keep that level of productivity up when the snap counts go up? And as you mentioned, not only did his role change going into this year, but as the season went on, his snap counts continued to rise, and he continued to be extremely productive. Look, only three sacks on the year, but this is a guy that consistently was showing the ability to win at the snap of the football, get into the backfield, impact plays, extremely disruptive both against the pass and against the run. Now everything else just kind of has to get sorted out. And obviously, look, these other things potentially can impact on the field status moving forward, no right? Like that stuff, there's no question of that. But since you and I don't have that information, we can only go off of what we see. And what we see is the tape is a dominant player.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned last year with Jordan Davis and Devonta Wyatt. I watched last year probably George's tape the same games three times because they had eight guys, I think. Yep. It was eight. And I know you do the same thing because you can't watch six guys at one time, you know. So I probably watched seven or eight games three times, you know. And he was the guy, even though he was not coming out a year ago, who stood out the most. And it's funny because, and we'll be getting to this in 2 years, but you watch their tape now, and number 13, the true freshman, Michael Williams, stands out the most.
It's a never-ending cycle.
You know, I know.
We always hit these teams where that will happen. But, no, Jalen Carter, I was glad you were able to kind of get through his tape and really kind of share some of your notes because he is a really fun tape to be able to go back and
without
study.
Without question.
Well, let's go into the SEC and continue in the SEC. Another player that has really stood out to you. I'm pretty sure you did him last summer as well, right, Greg?
I did not, actually. I did not.
You did not. Okay. No. All right. Well, this is Jaquelin Roy, the defensive tackle from LSU. He was in some mock drafts over the summer, Greg. He was a guy that some people were talking about as potential first-round pick. Like Carter, was kind of like a spot player last year and took on more of a full-time role this year. So I'm interested to get your thoughts on Roy and how he's come along here in 2022.
Yeah, he played far and away the most snaps this year that he's played in his career at LSU, so he was really kind of a full-time player this year. And to be honest with you, friend, he was one of my fun watches because I knew nothing about him other than the name, you know, and the fact that I did see him on some lists, you know. But other than that, I didn't really know much about him at all. I really think he's got a great array of traits. I mean, he's a plus athlete. He's got light feet. He's got quickness. He can play and can find space with strength. I mean, as I watched him, because LSU is one of those teams that played multiple fronts, as you know, I thought he showed he could be effective as a two-gap D tackle, controlling and displacing alignment. I thought he could be a one-gap D tackle, penetrating into gaps. He's got power through his hips and his core. He jarred alignment, interior alignment, with his arm extension. I think there's a lot to be mined there as a pass rusher. I think he has enough movement and lightness to his movement that he can become a good pass rusher. And to me, given that he only had 1 year playing, you know, approximately 700 snaps, I think that he's an ascending prospect who can, you know, we might be talking about him in 3 years down the road as a three-down D tackle that is, you know, is a really good player. But I think at this point, he's still developing. But I think it's all there on tape.
So I think what's interesting with interior defensive linemen is now, especially with all the different multiple fronts that teams are using, you know, teams aren't necessarily purely, all right, we're going to play a 4-3 over front. Here's our shade. Here's our three tech. That's how we're lining up down after down after down. Those teams are fewer and far between now. And so when you're looking at your tackles, you almost have to put them in some different buckets. Like, okay, there are some guys that are just pure shades. There are pure three techniques. But now it feels like a lot of teams, you're kind of looking for that combo skill set. Are you a guy that can line up as a three technique and as a 4-eye? Are you a guy that can line up as a 3 and also as a nose? How do you kind of view Roy? Does he have that positional versatility? How do you think that he can be utilized for a team that wants to deploy multiple fronts?
I think he can absolutely be utilized that way. The one thing that, you know, when you watch tape, sometimes, as you know, how a player is deployed by the coaching staff tells you a lot. And he played on third down, okay? And that third and long, by the way. So that tells you, because they obviously had other pass rushers. They have Ojulari, really good edge player. Gay, who's not quite a great edge player, but certainly he played, you know, on third down at times, among other players who were not coming out this year. You know, LSU does get players, as we all
There's
know.
There's this kid, Mason Smith there, Greg, who played early in the year and then got hurt, who we will be talking about next year.
I remember the name, but I wasn't watching him in detail, obviously. But Roy played on third and long, and often they played him, they played a three-man front often, and he lined up as the zero technique over the offensive center. Now, he didn't do that all the time on third down, but he did quite a bit. So the fact that they played him on third down, both as a zero technique and as a 3-technique 4-eye, tells you that they believe he's a good pass rusher, because you don't play your bad pass rushers on third and long. So, you know, that also told me, besides the film, which I thought was very impressive, as I said, that, hey, this guy's got pass rush traits, and he's only going to get better with those traits.
He's a really interesting study, and I'm glad to hear that you do like him, because I think he's a guy that's kind of getting slept on a little bit with this interior defensive line.
I agree.
You mentioned one of his teammates there, and he's the next guy I wanted to ask you about, B.J. Ojulari. His brother Azeez Ojulari, a top 40 pick by the New York Giants. He's just now finished his second year in the NFL. B.J., he's a sleek, slender rusher, more of a speed, like high side guy. Interested to kind of get your thoughts on him, because I did him over the summer and from the fall as well.
Yeah, and you know, a couple of things stood out to me right away. Number one, he rarely comes off the field, man. So he plays almost every snap. And that, to me, in and of itself is impressive. You know, you don't see that with a lot of guys. And the other thing that stood out to me, and maybe you see it differently, but I thought he played the run really competitively. You know, he's not a big guy, and his body type is not such that he's necessarily just going to stand people up. But I thought he played highly competitively against the run. He battled and competed. I thought his effort was there. I thought there were snaps he played stronger than his size. Now, we know that ultimately he'll be drafted based on the fact that he can rush the quarterback. You know, he's over 6'2", weighs close to 250. Just like his brother, has tremendous arm length.
Yeah, 34 he's short and long. Yeah, no question.
Yeah, really long arms. You know, and I think that, you know, he's a sudden, explosive athlete. One of the things I think he does need to work on, I think there were many times where he looked really good rushing the quarterback, where you said, wow, look at the quickness, look at the burst, look at the moves. He showed some really good spin moves. He can bend. I think he has to finish better. I think that he seems to get close, and you're really excited by just what I said, you know, the way in which he moves, but I think he needs to finish when he gets near the quarterback.
30 hits, which is a really good number over the course of his career, especially considering he's only got 24 starts, 16 and a half sacks. So to your point, that ratio a little bit thrown off there. But I think he actually took a big jump as a run defender this year. That was one of my issues coming into the season. But to your point, I thought this year we saw a lot of strides in that area, and I'm glad he became a much more reliable three-down player. He did play a lot of snaps last year as a true sophomore, but this year as a junior, I thought he was much more impactful against the run as that three-down player, and I think that will be big for him moving forward to the NFL. I really like guys with this body type that you mentioned, like the a little bit shorter but really long, you know, because he doesn't have a huge strike zone for offensive tackles to be able to hit, but he's got that length too to maintain that separation. That makes it even tougher for guys to be able to get their hands on him.
Yeah, and when they played Georgia, you know, he just had some really dominating pass rush snaps against Broderick Jones, a player that a lot of people are talking about. I didn't particularly think he was that good a pass protector, but I guess others do. But he had some really strong snaps against him rushing the quarterback.
All right, well, let's go to another player here. We talked about Jalen Carter at the top, And Carter is a guy that certainly is going to be in the, on the table as a top 10, top 15 type selection at the very least here in this class. Another guy who is being talked about in that same vein, Miles Murphy from Clemson, the defensive end, another true junior here, built differently than Ojulari for sure. Ojulari, you know, 6'2", just under 250. Miles Murphy, a much different body type. What did you see from Miles Murphy over the course of your film study?
Yeah, you know, now Murphy is a guy I watched in detail last summer from 2021. So I had a pretty good foundation of Murphy.
Yep.
And I thought he improved this year. You know, the numbers are not, you know, great. You don't look at his sack numbers and go, wow, this guy's unbelievable. First of all, he looks the part. I mean, you know, when you start looking at you know, his size and his just his overall build, you kind of go, wow, this guy really, you know, he's a defensive end. I thought when I watched him in 2021, I thought he was a little stiff and straight line. Didn't think he was really loose-hipped. I didn't see him that way. This year, I thought he showed much more bend and flexibility as an edge pass rusher. And I thought you saw some motorcycle lean where he cleared the arc with some burst and some speed and change of direction and redirect when demanded. So, again, putting aside numbers, I just thought as a pass rusher, he was you just saw some advancement and refinement from 2021 to 2022.
Yeah, to your point, you know, when I studied him in the fall, or in the summer rather, you know, a couple of names I wrote down were Quentin Copels, Shalik Calhoun, like, you know, kind of like bigger defensive ends that, you know, were a little bit stiff. But I agree. I mean, when you watch him for a guy who's, I mean, damn, he came in just under 270 at the combine.
Yeah.
He's got like a level of smoothness to him as an athlete that's pretty impressive. And so I think that's what gets people really excited about what he could be is that, you know, for a bigger guy, he does have some athleticism that can get you excited. I mean, 14 and a half sacks the last two seasons has shown the ability to be a quality three down player at a young age. He'll be a 21-year-old rookie. So I think there are reasons to be excited about Miles Murphy from a trait standpoint for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a sense, without knowing the kid, obviously, I think there's a sense that he could still be ascending, that he still could be getting better, you know. And, you know, I mentioned that I saw him as a 4-3 DN, but with so many teams playing these 5-2 fronts, when you look at someone like a Josh Sweat with the Eagles, could you see Murphy, you know, lining up in that kind of role, you know, for a team that, you know, plays a 5-2 front? And then, of course, when you go to your pass rush front, if it's four down, he would, you know, likely line up as an edge rusher. But I just thought that there was meaningful improvement in the way in which he played separate from numbers and statistics.
Yeah, that's the thing is that when you watch them go into their multiple fronts there, you know, he was mainly like a 5 or a 7 tech, you know, in their even fronts. But as soon as they went to like some of those bare looks, he kicked inside as a 4-eye or as a 3. So
that
position over. Yeah, he's done it. And I mean, he's been almost pretty good at it.
He's almost 270, so he can do that.
No question. And so that's one of the things that's really attractive about Miles Murphy. Let's now go to the running back position. We've done a bunch of backs already, but we've got a couple that we haven't hit on yet. One of them could be an early day 2 pick, and that's Devin Achane from Texas A&M. Certainly one of the more dynamic athletes at all the skill position players spots here, Greg. Interested to get your thoughts on Achane.
Yeah, Devin Achane is really kind of an interesting watch. I did him last summer, by the way, and then, of course, I did him again this year. We knew he'd run fast. He's a track guy. I mean, he ran a 4.32. We knew that was going to happen. You know, he's 5'8 and a half, 188. So
that's the rub.
Yeah, exactly. Good way to say it. But, you know, he's electric. He's explosive. He's a very good receiver. You know, you saw the receiving traits more so a year ago. Those traits are there. That's a function of how the offense. Look, Texas A&M did not have a very good year offensively. They had, you know, a bit of a revolving door at quarterback. So that's. That has nothing to do with his receiving traits. He's a very good receiver who can split from the formation and run a variety of routes. So he can do that. But he's got sudden, quick feet. He can run with velocity. He can run with explosiveness. You know, he's an odd runner to me, Fran, in that he's not naturally shifty or elusive in the sense that he's smooth, but he can change direction.
Yes.
And he does it in kind of a different way. He can stop and start and explode. He can re-accelerate with the best of them. You know, when he's sort of a darter, a slasher, he's got really good contact balance. For a guy that weighs 188 pounds, he does not go down easy. He finishes runs. I know you've watched quite a bit of him as well. He became kind of a fun guy to watch for me because he's kind of different, but I really like his tape a lot.
It's funny you say that because one of his teammates last year at the Combine, so 2022, we were just talking about A-Chain, and he said that people see his small, how small he is. They see his small stature, but he's a powerful back. Like, you need more than one guy to take him down. You see the speed he's got, obviously, but it's one of those like, oh, he's short, not small. Now, he's 188 pounds, and I think that is going to be the a question for a lot of teams is what role can this guy play in the NFL? Is he going to be, he had 200 carries this year for Texas A&M. Are you going to realistically put that on this guy in the NFL? And if not, what is he for you? Is he, a change of pace guy that's going to touch it, 10 to 12 times on any given week, both run and pass? How do you view his role moving to the league?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, depending on the team and scheme, that's what it comes down to. In other words, think of the Chargers, and of course they'll have a different offense this year with Kellen Moore, but with the previous coordinator, can you see Devin Achane be an Austin Eckler kind of back who had about 200 carries? He was their primary back, their number one back, but not a feature back in a strict sense. So can you think of a guy like Achane getting 180, 190 carries as a quote-unquote number one back, depending on what the scheme is? We all know he's not getting 270 carries. That's not happening. So if that's not the case, is he a second back, but a back that, you can give multiple possessions throughout a game to? In other words, let's say you have a number one back, but, if you, get 11, 12 possessions, maybe A-Chain plays three full possessions, and whatever that turns out to be in terms of carries and pass targets, that's what it turns out to be. But could he be that guy? I think, to me, those are kind of the two ways in which he could be used.
Let's get to another back who saw an expanded role. Honestly, was hoping for an even more expanded role in the SEC this year, and that's Zach Evans from Ole Miss. He transferred in from TCU. We talked about this player earlier this week with Dane in our running back preview. But, Greg, I'm interested to get your thoughts on Zach Evans, who, again, came in from TCU. He had 92 carries for the Horned Frogs in 21 and had just about 150 touches this year for Ole Miss. Was hoping for a little bit more, but got unseated by a true freshman there midway through the year. But Zach Evans, a talented runner.
Yeah, he was the first five-star recruit in the history of TCU. And then, of course, he transferred. I watched him last summer. I watched all of his carries at TCU because, as you said, I think it was 96, something along those lines.
Yep.
And I watched pretty much almost all of his carries this year, this guy's pretty explosive, Fran. I mean, he's a little straight line. I would say he's more linear than laterally shifty. He's a little long-legged, which, impacts your ability to really cut sharply laterally. But he is explosive. He's got really good vision in the open field. He defeats angles once he gets past the first level of the defense. He can run away from people. I think he needs work on his patience and his tempo in the zone run game. I think he just hits everything. So, I don't think that he has a great feel for pace and for his blocking scheme and how the defense changes, after the snap of the ball with the gap fluidity. But you're dealing with a guy that has outstanding straight line speed. He's physical. He has really good contact balance, which sometimes mitigates his lack of lateral juice. I'm not sure exactly what he is in the NFL. He weighed 202 at the Combine, but this guy is a big play back. And you know how the league thinks in terms of big plays. Everybody wants it, and he can give it to you. I mean, his ability to take it to the house is a special trait, and he brings that.
Can I throw a name at you? Came to me as I was watching him for my final time preparing for the episode earlier this week. Do you remember Nile Davis coming out of Arkansas?
Yeah. I do.
He kind of remember because Nile Davis coming out of Arkansas a few years back. This was a few years after Darren McFadden, and he was kind of modeled his game a little bit after McFadden, where he was kind of like a thickly built but explosive, like straight line, hard charging runner. And I kind of feel like that could be Zach Evans. Now Davis kind of bounced around a little bit. It could be that guy. Like, could he be even like an Alex Collins? I'm sticking with the Arkansas theme. Like, he could be like that kind of runner as well. And Alex Collins, he's had a decent career in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he's more explosive than those guys. I mean, you know, again, he didn't run at the combine.
We didn't see it, right? Yep.
But the 40 times kind of irrelevant when you watch his tape. This guy, he just beats angles. You've watched
he's got
him,
juice.
You know. I mean,
yep.
He is really an explosive back. You know, he's a hard guy to figure. My sense is that he's certainly not going to translate early in his career as a quote unquote number one back. But his explosiveness and big playability will get him early carries as a complementary type piece. Now, what's your thought? Do you think down the road he could possess the traits to develop into, you know, a number one back depending on team and scheme?
No question. He's got three down skill set all day. It's just a matter of like since we haven't seen it in college for two different programs. And it just like gives you like plants that seed of doubt that's hard to unseat of in terms of whether he can do it in the league.
Yeah, he did catch the ball more in 2021 at TCU. Yep. So you did see that. And in fact, he was detached from the formation in empty sets in 2021 at TCU. So we have seen him catch the ball. You know, he can do that, you know. So as you said, he does have a three down skill set, but this guy's fascinating to me because you know how the league thinks. This guy can take it to the house.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, let's now transition to Draft Buzz as I welcome in Ben Fennell. Great stuff there from Greg Cosell. Ben, before we get into some of our draft-centric stuff, the new league year is upon us, and I want to ask you, as we've seen now just a long, long, long list of free agent moves, players that have been released, players that have been traded, a bunch of moves here. We don't need to like spend too much time on each of these, but I want to get the five biggest moves that you think impact round one of the draft the most as we sit here on Thursday, March 16th. And obviously there's a lot that still can happen here that can impact the first round. But what's the first one that comes to mind here in terms of impacting round one?
That's a fun exercise. Instead of going through team by team, position, position, going through them all, we'll be out here for 3 hours. So let's save our podcast QCers some time this afternoon. But right now we got to go right to the tackle market. And I think the Bengals taking Orlando Brown this morning and the Chiefs going with Juwan Taylor, even, you know, McGlinchey to Denver, Andre Dillard to Tennessee, starts to clear up a lot of the tackle landing places that we had kind of pegged in the middle to end of the round one. So I think that leaves these teams a little bit more flexible. And we had just spoken last week about the Anton Harrisons and Darnell Wrights and DeJuan Joneses potentially getting thrusted up in the end of round one. This picture kind of changes things. Now that the Bengals and Chiefs and some of those late round one teams have their tackle, have their high dollar pass protector, suddenly I'm not pegging those tackles into those spots. So I think those moves, particularly first and foremost, Fran, probably affect round one the most.
Dude, you mentioned the Andre Dillard contract. Like when I saw that, I was like, that's kind of like that's starter money. And that's when you look at mock drafts. Like, everybody just has been penciling in tackle, 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 tackle for Tennessee. I don't know that you necessarily can do that now unless you think that you're going to move that player over to right tackle.
Yeah, I think it really opens up the conversation for the first round. And you have to weigh some of the free agent market with the draft prospects. And if you're looking for starters, some of these guys on the free agent market plugged in those spots that you needed, the McGlinchies, the Dillards of the world, and you're comparing them to the young players coming out in college. It's a kind of an open market, you know, finding ways to plug your roster. And I think a lot of these teams taking tackles really make some of the tackles in round one, the landing spots, a little more tough.
All right, let's go to the next one. Which one comes up to mind next?
Well, it's probably going to be David Montgomery going to the Lions.
Yes.
And I know there's some other landscape of running backs that have been settled with the franchise backs and Pollard and Barkley and Jacobs and Rashad Penny coming here to Philadelphia. But in particular, David Montgomery, I think, going to the Lions, that was kind of a designer sexy pick for maybe a Bijan Robinson.
Yep.
A team that had two first-round picks, a team that loves to run the ball, looking for that, you know, Robin to the DeAndre Swift Batman, or at least to replace Jamal Williams, who they lost in free agency. David Montgomery, all intents, I think round one running back is out of the discussion for the Detroit Lions. So this absolutely, I think, settles some first round conversation.
Yep, that's a really, really good point. I think that definitely removes them from the running back discussion there. With that, was it the 26th pick, 25th pick, whatever they've got there at the back end of round one. What about number three?
All right, I'm going to hit you with a two-pack here, two team-specific landings. And I think that's Geno Smith recommitting to the Seattle Seahawks and vice versa. I think that makes that landing spot for a quarterback in round one probably not going to happen. Although, you know, if an Anthony Richardson falls in their lap, could they maybe add him to the depth chart and sit him for a year or two? I don't see that being very likely. So I think Geno really clears up some of the positional fits for the Seattle Seahawks in the top 10. Conversely, the back half of round one, how about the Giants trading for Darren Waller? A team that now you can pair him with the second-year player Daniel Bellinger. And I think that 25th overall in the back end of round one, that was kind of a sexy spot for maybe a Dalton Kincaid, maybe one of these stretch, you know, vertical seam, you know, tight ends. So I think the Giants locking up that, you know, pass game tight end, and that just makes the positional projection for the Giants a little bit clearer.
WR next to wide receiver, next to the New York Giants. You feel pretty good about making that call.
They could be pass rusher. They could use a cover corner out there. They could use a Trent Simpson, a cover linebacker. So, well, maybe it's clearing up a little bit. There's still some murkiness.
Dude, I love the Trenton Simpson fit with New York. I think that is a great, great fit in Wink Martindale's scheme. I'll be interested to see what Seattle does if, like, a quarterback does fall to them at five that they love. Like, do you feel that you can make that move? I think you look at the Geno Smith contract after year one. Yeah, like, you can probably make a move there if you really want to. So I think that would be fascinating to watch. What's item number four on your list?
It's got to be the corners, you know, here in Philadelphia, adding, you know, James Bradberry and Darius Slay back on the outside. I think that clears up maybe that, you know, intent for them to go after a corner with the 10th pick there. I think that was a popular landing spot. I think it makes them a little bit more flexible. We know Howie Roseman likes to go into the draft ready to play a game, which makes it really tough to kind of project positionally where this team's going to go. That's good problems to have, but solidifying the corners on the outside, maybe at 10, the Devin Witherspoon, Christian Gonzalez's won't be in play there. They could go elsewhere. Same thing with kind of with Dallas, them trading for Stephon Gilmore, pairing with Trayvon Diggs. I think a lot of people had press corner plugged into there in the end of round one or middle end of round one where Dallas was picking. I think that kind of makes them want to go elsewhere. So I think adding some of these free agent signings are suddenly making those round one mocks a little tougher to peg.
Yeah, that's a good one. It'll be interesting to see just how early the corners come off the board. Typically, as early as number six to Detroit, that's like the first time you'll see a Christian Gonzalez or a Devin Witherspoon. Will that happen? I mean, the Detroit Lions, they go out and they get Cam Sutton. They give him starting money, right? So you have Sutton paired with Okuda. Doesn't feel like you would probably add a number six overall pick to the secondary there in that manner. So that'll be fascinating to see just how that the veteran market affects the cornerback market in the draft. Let's go down to number five. Last one.
All right, last thing. I love some of the linebacker signings around the NFL. Jermaine Pratt going back. Tremaine Edmonds and T.J. Edwards going to Chicago. Kaiser White joining Nick Rallis and Jonathan Gannon and his old coaches in Philly and Arizona. However, Fran, I don't know if any of these linebacker signings really affect round one. You know, and I think, you know, trying to project what linebackers are going to be coveted in round one outside of maybe Trenton Simpson. I didn't know if Jack Campbell is going to work his way in there. It seems like the Drew Sanders, you know, love for round one kind of came and went. So I think while there's some high-dollar linebackers being signed around the NFL, I'm not sure they're really going to affect round one. And I think there's some other ones to point to as well. I mean, Hargrave taking big money to San Francisco. Well, they have no first-round pick, so I don't see any effect there. Jesse Bates, big money to Atlanta. Atlanta wasn't considering a DB or safety at the eighth overall pick. So even though there's some big signings around there, around the NFL, and there's some good signings and some needed signings, some big-dollar signings, not everyone's going to affect round one as well. So my fifth one here, even though there's some big ones, round one, I think, is still a little bit up in the air for certain teams.
Yeah, green light at linebacker for sure, like you mentioned at the top there. It'll be interesting to see just who exactly comes off the board at that position. I want to ask you, because Dane and I did our running back preview earlier this week for all of our listeners. If you missed that, make sure you go check that out earlier in the feed. So I want to ask you real quick, just one running back question. You get your pick of all the guys on day two. Really, essentially, I'm taking like Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs out of this equation. One running back, doesn't scheme agnostic. You don't know what your backfield looks like, you know, whatever it is. Who are you taking and why? You get one running back to take with you moving to the league.
That's tough, Fran. I have such a close grade on Zach Charbonnet and Tajay Spears. And I was hoping you were going to steer me to some water. Like, oh, you need an early down back. Oh, no, you can use a well-rounded third down back or a, you know, multi-purpose back. I have a tough time picking between the two of those. So it would definitely depend on my roster landscape. It would definitely depend on what type of running scheme I'm, you know, deploying out there. But Zach Charbonnet, Tajay Spears, I see either of them sitting with the 40th or 50th pick. they could be excellent additions to nearly every offense. I think Zach Charbonnet is going to be one of the premier between the tackles runners that has a little bit more open field juice than people think. And Tajay Spears is a star in the making. Just a matter of what team covets him versus the draft valuation. But two really good players, and I see day two backs going out all over the place.
Can I ask you about Devin Achane? We just talked about him in the last segment with Greg.
That was the next name I was going to bring up. Yep.
Well, that's why I think it's interesting because, you know, when you look at Achane, yeah, like electric. He is so dynamic as an athlete. But, you know, at that size, I think people rightfully will bring up, like, what is his role going to be in the NFL? What is your thought in terms of how you utilize a Devin Achane moving in the league?
Well, I think an early role in his career, you know, could just be a third down back, a guy you want to get in space, use in the pass game, misdirection, you know, change of pace type of things. I could see very secure offenses and secure minds and secure organizations adding him to the meal. You know, a team like Chiefs and Andy Reid or maybe Zach Taylor adding him to complement a Joe Mixon, who they just lost to Samaje Perine in free agency. I know a different type of back, but a much more complimentative back to a Joe Mixon. So I could see him going to a team that already has a complete offense, that isn't looking for a bell cow. They're just looking for a little razzle-dazzle in their offense, a little bit of a playmaker. So could just, you know, be a third down back to start. Actually went through an exercise and watched all his pass game targets this morning. Just want to see how they were featuring him, how well he caught the ball, how often he had to get himself open, and then how often he was making defenders miss after the catch. So a little interesting study. I don't want to dive all the way into that, but I think early in his career, being a third down back, and I could see him going right to a contending team.
So you're, as you mentioned, you're in your office at Films, at NFL Films over in South Jersey. You're working on a lot of packages that will air in the NFL Network draft broadcast. So you're grinding through the film. You're watching a lot of tape. Over the last week, since we last spoke, who's the most fun tape that you've studied and why? You're doing a bunch of different projects. Some guys you're watching for fun. You're seeing pro day workouts roll in. So a lot of different pathways you could take here to your most fun tape in the last week.
All right. So I really dove into Evan Hull at Northwestern over the past week. He was the one that ran every drill down in the end zone at the combine, was at the Senior Bowl. Really nice week. I don't feel like he got enough buzz. This guy's had a prolific career at Northwestern, seemingly just keeps getting overlooked as far as conversation. Oh, Rashawn Slater, looking to pave lanes. Oh, Peter Skoronski. Well, there's a running back running for 1,000 yards every year back there. He catches the football well. He's smart. He tested really well at, you know, 5'10", 211, ran 4.4s, 37-inch vertical, really good drills. He's a good kid. And you watch him on third down, you get excited about all his pass game contributions. And then just watch him pre-snap, Fran. This guy's one of the more active pre-snap communicators I've ever studied. Always calling out blitzers, calling out his protection assignments, usually with two hands as well, which tells me a lot of dual reads. He's pointing to a guy inside and outside, very square on contact. He's really tough to bring down. He made Jack Campbell look silly year after year in the open field. He's a lot of fun, and a guy I just don't think is getting enough attention. He is in this class, really interesting running back. I could see him being one of the early day three backs off the board. And then by the time we hit October, November, everybody's saying, how did he get to day three? Just like Isaiah Pacheco type. Seems like there's one of those every year. Put me down for Evan Hull. And one little peek to the future, as I've been plugging in some data for 2024. Uh-oh. Man, these linebackers. Barrett Carter at Clemson. Abdul Carter at Penn State. Looks like Micah Parsons, Fran. I kid you not. Wears number 11. Looks 6'3", 245. Rushes the passer. Cedric Gray at North Carolina. Looks like he was built in a lab. There are some exciting, exciting linebackers down the road in college football. So Evan Hull in this class, really exciting. And then just peeking down the road next year, hey, ebbs and flows of the draft classes, kind of a down year for linebackers. It's about to rocket up through your ceilings next year. And I just wanted to plug in some info. Barrett Carter, Abdul Carter, Penn State, Cedric Gray, North Carolina, on top of, obviously, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. and Liam Eichenberg. Really fun linebacker class coming up, guys.
See, I wasn't expecting us to go down this path, and here we are talking about 2024 linebackers.
You want to talk about some fun tape? You know, watch that clip of Barrett Carter I put up on Twitter 2 days ago, him hurdling a running back on the way to the quarterback. A lot of clips like that, so some fun players in college football. Yeah, speaking ahead.
Long-time listeners know that you get sick of the draft class for that current year in like the first week of February. So you're always like starting itching to like look ahead. So no surprise that you're willing to bring these guys up here in the middle of March. Real quick, I probably should have asked this like towards the top when we went through those five free agent moves. But obviously, another big thing that's happening here this week, high anticipation of an Aaron Rodgers trade, probably to the New York Jets. This trade will likely end up with the Packers having two first-round picks in the top 15. They're own and potentially the New York Jets is the way that it's looking right now. Based off the way they operate, how do you envision those two picks being used? Because, you know, it's funny, just again, looking at mock drafts the way that I do, it feels like everybody's like putting, it's just like Michael Mayer, every single mock draft for the Green Bay Packers. And it's like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I guess they could go Michael Mayer, but they feel like no one really knows like what to do with the Green Bay Packers, and especially considering that it probably isn't going to be Aaron Rodgers there. So I'm interested if they were to have two picks in the top 15. Like, how do you envision this franchise utilizing those two assets?
I mean, I could say I don't know like eight different ways in this conversation, to be perfectly honest with you, Frank, because I don't know what the compensation is going to be. The Jets do not want to give up a first rounder this year, because they're obviously a contending team. They're going full throttle to compete. So it's like, don't strip us from our capital and ability to compete to get this quarterback. So I think that if they don't get that first rounder, Green Bay, in return for this year, they want the Jets to then take on more of Rodgers' contract. And there's a lot of battle of money right now. So let's say they do end up with two first round picks this year. Again, I have no idea where this team wants to go. I have no clue, and I think that's one of the premier teams and really not being able to anticipate where they go in the draft. You could see them going for the trenches and adding some O-line, a tackle of the future, you know, adding some edge rushers to, you know, look down the road with. Can see some receiver needs, DB needs. They might be replacing three secondary members this offseason, can use that wide tight end. And then all intents, Fran, I can see them trading out too. Yep, you know, Michael Mayer is probably not worth the 13th or the 15th pick. You'll probably get him, 20 picks later in a similar type of player, similar other positions we had mentioned. So I have no idea, Fran. And I think that's what makes him one of the more exciting teams. And just when a team like that passes on a player, you think they might circle back and trade up and go get that player, four picks later. They do some weird stuff on draft day. They're one of the more unpredictable teams. And because of that, I've kind of set up a lot of this landscape that we're going through with Aaron Rodgers because of that unpredictability. So I studied this team pretty in depth, as you know, and I could very confidently say I have no idea.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, and honestly, I don't blame them for sticking their feet in the sand here and saying like, yeah, like if you're not giving us a first round pick this year, like we're not making this trade. Like, I think that they are perfectly within their rights to say that. They have plenty of leverage there to be able to hold that ground. It'll be fascinating to watch over these next couple of weeks. Fascinating is a kind way to put it. Infuriating, probably another word I could use as well. But we'll see exactly what happens here with these two teams and with quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Speaking of the draft and mock drafts, we'll get into our mock draft roundup here. With free agency underway, the new league year here, the amount of mock drafts just kind of dwindled because everybody's like looking at free agency, but did find a good one here, a new set of authors here, Dave Hellman and Carmen Vitale, two former team employees, Dave Hellman with the Dallas Cowboys, Carmen Vitale down with the Bucks. They are both now with Fox Sports. They did a dual mock draft together, and so we are going to now break it down. Let's go to the top five here. The Carolina Panthers selecting quarterback C.J. Stroud from Ohio State. Quarterback Bryce Young going number two to the Houston Texans. Will Anderson, the only non-quarterback to go in this top five. He goes number three to Arizona. Will Levis goes number four to the Indianapolis Colts. And Anthony Richardson goes number five to the Seattle Seahawks. Ben, four quarterbacks in the top five. I think that's the first time ever that would happen. And it's, I mean, certainly within the realm of possibilities here with this class.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people are looking at the defensive player Arizona's going to covet. If someone's going to come up and take that number three overall spot, love C.J. Stroud to Carolina. Love Will Levis going to the Indianapolis Colts. And then it's that Seattle pick there. You know, Anthony Richardson, if they're sitting there at five, do you take him and put him on ice and let Geno run the show for a year, maybe 2 years? You know, I think that number five spot's going to be really interesting as well. If they don't want a quarterback, I'm putting a yard sale sign up to say, if you want Anthony Richardson, come get him. He's years for the taking.
Yeah, to the point you made about Geno earlier is like, let's say the Colts take Richardson instead of Levis, and it's Levis that falls to Seattle. Does Seattle say, okay, we're going to go in a different direction, we're going to trade down, or we're going to take a position player? I think that kind of changes things in terms of how these quarterbacks come off the board, and obviously it all starts at number one. And based off reports, I mean, we've seen conflicting reports just since, I mean, it's been less than a week since the Panthers traded up to number one. You'll see some reports that it's Anthony Richardson versus C.J. Stroud. You'll see another one where it's C.J. Stroud versus Bryce Young. They've been rumored about Will Levis. There have been rumors about Will Levis going to the Panthers, Dave Tepper being in love with Will Levis since the fall, right? So I think that's going to be fascinating to see just how this all plays out.
Yeah, and just to be fair, we love Dave and Carmen. This mock was done Tuesday at about 3 o'clock, guys.
Yes.
So a lot has happened since then. There's mock drafts have obviously, like you said, taken a bit of a backseat this week. It's a little tough to find one. We love anytime draft analysts do some content, especially Dave and Carmen. So we're breaking it down. But it was about 72 hours ago at this point. So we're about to dive into the Eagles pick here, which certainly the narrative has changed a little bit. So we're not trying to bury this mock draft, but just highlight some of the picks and talk about it.
Well, it's a perfect segue because, as you mentioned, you get into number 10 and the Eagles picking here. They select Oregon corner Christian Gonzalez. And here's the blurb.
I can't even remember where the Eagles were at Tuesday at 3 o'clock. Did they have Bradbury at that point? Was Slay an Eagle? Was he not an Eagle? Is he back with the Eagles?
Well, here's the blur. It's a bit of a projection, but an easy one to believe. The Eagles are reportedly allowing Darius Slay to explore a trade. That's where we were at Tuesday afternoon, which makes sense given his advanced age, his hat, and his cap hit. If Philly is able to deal him, why not immediately replace him with one of the best corners in this draft? That's the benefit of finagling your way to an extra first-round pick. So, Ben, obviously this Slay stuff is outdated, but Christian Gonzalez has become a pretty popular player for mock drafters. The Eagles at 10. I think that even with the addition of both of those guys, but keeping both Darius Slay and James Bradbury in Philadelphia, we've seen this organization do this before. You got to go back a ways, but you go back to 2003 when they had Troy Vincent and Bobby Taylor, and they selected Lito Shepherd and Sheldon Brown to start off that draft in 2003. So it wouldn't be crazy to say, like, okay, you go out and you take a corner like Christian Gonzalez at number 10. But as we talked about earlier, I'm interested to see when that run on corner starts here in this class.
I really feel like they're going to stick to their board in this draft. They're going to be ready to play a game going into draft weekend and trust their board and rankings. And whoever is there at 10 and at 30 and whoever else, they're going to very comfortably just take those players, whether it's an edge, whether it's a corner, even if they sign a Bradbury and a Darius Slay. The level of prospect of Christian Gonzalez does not come out every year. You still take him because that's a high-level prospect in a premier position that you will reap the benefits at some point, whether it's this season or down the road. So, same thing with edge rusher. You sign back a Brandon Graham. Yeah, you have Derek Barnett still. You have Hassan Reddick. You have Josh Sweat. That's four defensive ends. Well, if Tyree Wilson is sitting there at 10 and he's number one on their board, they're going to sprint that up to the podium. Even if they have guys in those spots, those are good problems to have. And when we talk about being ready to play a game on draft weekend, this is the luxuries you get off of that. Trust your board and just start adding good players to the roster and don't worry about when you play them and where you play them.
Well, let's play the game of who are the players that are going off the board in this area. At number 7, the Las Vegas Raiders select Georgia defensive tackle Jalen Carter. At number 8, the Atlanta Falcons select pass rusher Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech. At number 9, the Chicago Bears select offensive tackle Peter Skoronski from Northwestern. You had the Eagles pick at 10, followed by number 11, the Tennessee Titans taking wide receiver Quentin Johnson from TCU. The Nolan Smith pick here, number 12, to the Houston Texans. We talked about that last week. I could really see that happening for Houston there. And then the New York Jets at number 13 selecting Utah tight end Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah,
that's a good one. That is an interesting one for sure, just kind of building up around a quarterback that you may potentially have there in New York. Ben, I want to ask you this question as we sit here Thursday, March 16th. Obviously, there's been a lot written. There's been a lot talked about Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle from Georgia. And you look at Tyree Wilson, a guy that, Daniel Jeremiah just a few weeks ago said some teams have higher grades on him than Will Anderson. Who goes first, in your opinion? There's a lot that's got to be decided here. But Jalen Carter or Tyree Wilson, who goes off the board first in, 5-6 weeks?
I think it's Jalen Carter. And I think his play and his film and high-level football You just can't deny that. And I think, you know, once he kind of settles his personal life and the off the field things, I think the tape and his football DNA will come back to earth. I'm actually a little bit down on Tyree Wilson compared to consensus. So this maybe isn't a fair question to me, as I don't think Tyree is quite the level of prospect I think he's being billed as. I don't have him as a top 10 type of prospect in this draft, last draft, or the draft before. Really interesting player. I think a little bit more raw than people think. Certainly some really impressive length and tools you can't teach. So there's going to be a lot of defensive line coaches just salivating to get their hands on this type of player. But right now, I think Jalen Carter first off the board.
All right, let's go to the next Eagle selection here, all the way up at number 30. Iowa State pass rusher Will McDonald is the pick here from Dave and Carmen. Here's the blurb from those guys. Philly has been to the Super Bowl twice since 2017, and both of those squads featured wave upon wave of quality pass rushers. Hassan Reddick and Josh Sweat are a great start, but even though Brandon Graham just re-signed, he can't do this forever. McDonald's athleticism will allow him to contribute early while he develops into a more complete player. So that is the blurb from Dave and Carmen. Ben, what are your thoughts on Will McDonald as we sit here in late March, mid-March?
Yeah, an exciting, explosive, loose, long pass rusher that I could absolutely see going into the back end of round one, potentially to one of those teams we were just talking about, you know, previously looking to be a tackle landing spot like the Chiefs and the Bengals. All of a sudden, they address that free agency. The edges could be thrusted up. Guys like Will McDonald, guys like Derek Hall, guys like B.J. Ojulari, which after that first 8 to 10 edges, kind of a drop-off. Same thing with tackles. There's about 6 to 7 starting caliber tackles and then a big drop-off. So I see all those types of prospects getting thrusted up. Will McDonald, again, going to a team that has 4 defensive ends signed on the roster, that's okay. Get high-level players onto this team. This may be a tackle spot for Philly. You know, if a Darnell Wright or Anton Harrison and that same conversation about tackles now not having landing spots, Billy's always willing to go back to the trenches. It's one of the safer moves, and as we know, it's paid off huge here for having a little bit of forward thinking, and that's kind of the name of the game here. Gonzalez, Will McDonald, or elsewhere, these are good problems to have.
Yeah, I mean, this kid's really, really long and super explosive. He's got flexibility. He's got traits, no question. It's about continuing to develop and refine his skill set as a rusher. But you get him into the building and kind of work from it from there. He doesn't have to be leaned on right away to be an every down guy. That's not what you're looking at there with Will McDonald in that selection. Let's now go to the players that are going off the board in that area. At number 26, the Dallas Cowboys selecting cornerback Deontay Banks. That was before the trade that Dallas made there. 27, Buffalo selecting linebacker Trent Simpson, the linebacker from Clemson. At 28, the Cincinnati Bengals selecting tackle Anton Harrison. The New Orleans Saints at 29 selecting defensive lineman Brian Brzee. And then at 31, the Kansas City Chiefs selecting the speedy receiver Jalen Hyatt from Tennessee. So, Ben, of those 6 picks, which one makes the most sense in your mind as we sit here at this point in the process?
You know, in that same conversation we had about Devin Achane, you know, going to a contending team, that's kind of the Jalen Hyatt pick there. You know, adding a speedster receiver to a complete offense, a contending team, it's really just an accent piece. And I think I could definitely see that. And honestly, the very same way I can talk myself into Jalen Hyatt at 31, I could talk myself into Devin Achane at 31 to the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, they give me that type of pick. And going through these other picks here, I mean, Anton Harrison, tackle, Bengals just got a tackle. Deontay Banks going to Dallas. They just traded for Stephon Gilmore. So obviously the news cycle has expired this mock a little bit. But Trenton Simpson to the Bills, well, they just lost a Tremaine Edmonds in free agency. So that one fits a little bit more appropriately. So yeah, we take it as we go here, Dave and Carmen.
Yeah, exactly right. I think that's why trying to do it this week is a tough process. So hats off to them for trying to pull it off. For me, I do like the Trent Simpson fit there for Buffalo. You lose Tremaine Edmonds, a really long athletic linebacker. Certainly it was a little bit raw coming out of Virginia Tech. And I think you look at Simpson and he's got a very, very similar profile. I kind of like that fit. I think it would check a lot of boxes there for Buffalo. I think that pick makes a lot of sense. I could certainly still see that happening here just a few weeks from now. What was your favorite player team fit in this mock draft? You look at all 31 picks.
Well, I love seeing Skoronski go to Chicago. I just think that Northwestern outside, you know, crappy field, bad weather type of attitude is going to fit out there. Just a great fit for the Ryan Poles era. They obviously can use some inside outside offensive line help. Not sure where you're playing them. The other one, Fran, Michael Mayer to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Love them adding a high-level wide tight end to pair with Evan Ingram. We know what Doug Peterson can do with those types of players and multi-tight end packages. And let me ask you a question. If Michael Mayer ended up with the exact career of a Brent Celek, is that a win?
If it's in the top 20?
And we know what type of player Brent was. Obviously not stuffing the stat sheet like Travis Kelce, but a damn tough wide tight end in this league for a long time.
Yeah, I think that here's what I would say. I think that people on the outside would say that it probably was not a win. Like if you would like ask like a national pundit or like a local writer from the Bills in 2030, they would say like, oh yeah, that was a bad pick. But then if you ask like local people, people that are here in the city and watch that player year after year after year, you would say, oh yeah, that was worth it. I think that would be. I think that would probably be the answer.
I think me and you probably have a slightly different view on Brent. We were very appreciative of his 11 years in the NFL. Exactly. Yep. And that's the type of player I think you're getting and maybe won't wow fans and maybe leave your fantasy teams a little disappointed on a week-to-week basis. But I'm telling you, the film watchers are going to go watch him on Monday mornings and be like, look at him pin down this DN one-on-one in the run game, or look at him catch this ball off play action or contested grab on third down. Probably not going to be the Dalton Kincaid type. But if he's a Celek, I'll take it.
For me, you know which one I loved? I really loved Brian Branch, the Alabama safety, going to the Minnesota Vikings at number 23. Because everyone and their mother is giving Minnesota a corner. And it's like corner, corner, corner. That secondary was brutal last year. But no one's really talking about safety with them. And I think when you look at Branch, certainly he's got that flexibility. He can play in the slot and do a lot there. But I think back to, the new defensive coordinator there is Brian Flores, previously with the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, and orchestrated an outstanding defense there. And a pick that he just made recently in the top 50 that has paid huge dividends for that defense, Javon Holland coming out of Oregon. And Holland was similar to Branch in terms of usage. They were different body types, but both guys were deep players that also did an outstanding job in the slot, were playmakers in the back end in the secondary. And I think that you might see a little bit of that same kind of usage there when you look at Brian Branch and what Javon Holland was able to offer Brian Flores in Miami. I think that Branch could do the same thing in this Minnesota defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, Minnesota just went out and signed a Byron Murphy there at nickel, which maybe, murkies up this selection. But they're definitely revamping the back end of Minnesota, and you could probably put the linebacker conversation in with that. Obviously, Eric Kendricks, they just let go, in parting ways there. But Lewis Cine is obviously going to come off that major injury on the back end. They need to get smarter. They need to get faster. They need to get more playmaking in the middle of the field there. So I could definitely see them going after Brian Branch, even with the Byron Murphy signing. I think they just need a complete overhaul in that kind of back seven. They want to get smarter players out there. And a Brian Branch, I think, is going to be a great addition to any team, but particularly a Flores type of defense.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, so great stuff there from Ben and from Greg. Let's now get to a question here from our Apple Podcast page. And again, that is the number one way to reach us. If you have a question, a mock draft, player rankings, whatever it is you want us to break down or answer, go leave it there in the comment box, and we'll get to it here on an upcoming episode. TJM012287 left a 5-star review saying, Fran, I love the show. I know some may question the logic of the Eagles taking another wide receiver in the first round. However, I think an exception should be made for Jaxon Smith and Jigba. He'd be the perfect slot guy to pair with AJ Brown and Devontae Smith, and in my opinion, take this offense to new levels. Offense is how you win in today's NFL, and giving Jalen Hurts the best wide receiver group in the league seems smart to me. Could you see the Eagles taking JSN at number 10? Thank you. So, TJM, here's what I would say. Is it off the table? No, it's not off the table. I think anytime you're talking about a player of Jaxon Smith and Jigba's caliber, you're always going to have those discussions and say, all right, well, how can this guy help us? This is a guy that can separate at will. He's done an outstanding job whenever he's been on the field. He was hampered by an ankle injury for the majority of this season and then had to kind of shut it down towards the end. But when you look at Smith and Jigba going back to last year as a true sophomore when he was an All-American, was one of the most productive players in college football. This is a guy that never puts the ball on the ground, and he knows how to get open. And those are two great starting points for a wide receiver. Separate and catch it. And that's what Smith and Jigba can do at a very high level. He's not the most explosive pass catcher, the fastest guy you're ever going to see. But, you know, we talked about this at the combine. I remember Ella and I watching that workout and just being kind of awestruck by what we saw. I think when you look at Smith and Jigba, this guy has longtime NFL pro written all over him. I think then you start getting into like resource management and things like that. It's like, okay, yeah, is Jackson Smith and Jigba worth the number 10 pick in the draft? You could certainly make that argument. Would you rather have a defensive lineman, an offensive lineman, a corner, a safety, whatever position you want to insert there, and say, would you rather have a blue chip player from that position, and then with whatever wide receiver you can get at number 30 or at, you know, in the second round or however you want to slot that? Those are the conversations that decision makers are having with their scouting staffs right now. This week, next week, the week after that, those are the conversations that are being had as you kind of see how the draft board is starting to fall and you get a sense of the valuation of all these players, all the different buzz, all the different things, all the information being shared at pro days, on the trail over the next couple of weeks, over the next couple of months. I think that's really where you get a sense of, okay, would you rather have Jackson Smith and Jigba at 10 or would you rather have insert wide receiver here at number 30 with whoever we are able to get at number 10? So, Could I rule it out? No, you don't rule out anything. But I think when you look at the level of player, yes, he's certainly capable of going that high in the draft. So TJM, really appreciate the feedback. Thanks so much for the 5-star review. Thanks so much for the question. For anybody out there that wants their question answered, head on over to our Apple Podcast page. Leave it there in the comment box. We will get to it in an upcoming episode. Next week here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by Life Brand, Dane and I, we are going to be breaking down the defensive backs, so corners and safeties next week. We'll have another blueprint segment as well. But we got a lot of great feedback to this past week with Chicago Bears with Dan Durkin. Really appreciated Dan for joining us here this week. We'll have Greg and Ben back next week as well, right here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by Life Brand.